Golf's no different from hockey. Requires talent, self-discipline.
Golf requires goofy pants and a fat ass. You should talk to my neighbor, the accountant, probably a great golfer, huge ass.
How do you measure yourself with other golfers?
By height.
It's a very, very special honor.
I'm Paula Creamer, and you're listening.
Well, we're waiting.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, a.k.a. John Kreese from Cobra Kai. And you're listening to...
Quiet, please.
Sorry. Let the word go out from here across the land that Danny Noonan approved.
Hiya, boys. Nice day for golf, eh?
Quiet, please. Oh, you got secrets, eh?
Hey, this is Shooter McGavin. You're listening to the...
Hey, you guys. Hey, we're trying to have a podcast over here.
Greetings, fans of golf, and welcome to another edition of Quiet, Please, our golf podcast. I'm Alan Depew, and joining our virtual roundtable living room discussion that we have here, to my left, Boston Bob Baldessari, acclaimed PGA golf professional at the Woodford Club, as well as president of Reimagine Golf. Hello, Bobby.
Cheers. We have a threesome this evening.
Well, I'll get to that in a minute now, won't I? And I also have Mr. Andy Heidorn, Q Mixers, as well as golfing god.
Yeah. Second place finisher in the Horseshoe Bay Invitational last weekend.
Well, there you go. Amazing. And that's cut. Hey, there you go. And we need to discuss that. And by the way, Bobby tipped my hand. Threesome, because right down here, guys, in that bottom right-hand corner, that empty seat on the podcast tonight, don't be... Andy, don't be that guy. Hashtag
don't be that guy.
Don't be that top 100 instructor who confirms multiple times that you're going to come on the show and expound on his swing theory, intellect, whatever you want to call it, and then ghost the Andy Heidorn.
Two times.
Dos Equis.
Don't be that guest.
Which, by the way, I've had a few of those today. We are recording Tuesday evening. I had a pool party all day, so it should be a good time, guys. What do you want to talk about?
Cheers. Well, did you jump in the pool with your sneakers on?
No, I did not jump in the pool with my sneakers on. I had this like shark like swimsuit.
Oh.
Yeah, like Jaws. Heather bought it. What can I say?
You jump in the pool with your boombox?
I did not. Did not do that either. But I did jump in the pool because it's freaking hot. Northeastern parts of the U.S., it's freaking hot right now.
Well, it's hot here in Texas, too, and I'm sure it's hot in Lexington.
It's wicked hot here.
Or Versailles, as the refined people say it.
Versailles. Hey, Son number two just flew into to Louisville, actually, there, Bobby. He's over at where the hell is he? It came to me a moment ago. Oh, he's over in French Lick.
No, it's up in Indiana. That's not too far away.
Yeah. Played the Donald Ross course. Says it's been absolutely phenomenal.
I've been up there. It's so hard. It's crazy hard.
Really?
Yeah. The high course is like just the most amazing looking golf course I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It's really neat. And the Baden Hotel there is really something too. Yeah. Baden Springs, I think.
Yep. They have two properties that are related. They're unbelievable.
Yeah.
But the PGA course has bunkers, if you can imagine this, listeners. There's bunkers with mounds in the middle of the bunkers and bunkers on top of the mounds in the bunkers. It's just the most phenomenal looking thing you've ever seen.
Okay, so first of all, shout out to French Lick, other than being noted for Larry Bird. I think we need to do a show there.
Oh, we can. We'll call our buddy Brendan Sweeney.
All right. Well, let's go out there. We're going to do a little show there.
We're done.
We will discuss this. And because I have views on, I've met Pete. Pete was an interesting character. But he made some diabolical shit, Andy.
You know, I love his golf courses. I think TPC Sawgrass is one of my favorite golf courses I've ever played. He made Holiday Farms, I believe, in Indianapolis was his last course. It's beautiful. I'm a fan.
So I actually met him when I was with the Mid-Atlantic PGA, Bobby. You know that.
Yep.
And Bully Rock up in northeastern in Havre de Grace was just opening. So they
Rick Rounsville.
Rick Rounsville.
Ricky Rounds.
He was there at the time. They had media day, so I came to represent the PGA, and I had the opportunity to ride the golf course with Pete. We get to 17. Actually, we get to 18T, and he goes, "Now, guys, I want you to turn around and take a look." He goes, "We were designing this golf course, got to the 17th. He goes, "They pushed up that boulder, and it looked like that." And if you're on the podcast, what I'm doing is I'm basically holding up my middle finger. And he goes, "And that's the way you're going to feel after you walk off my golf course." All right, Pete.
Rick got pretty close to Pete.
Yeah,
he had spent a lot of time with him. Alice too.
I didn't like TB Dye's. I didn't like the kids, some of their designs. I felt like you hit it down the middle of the fairway and it would just ricochet. You could literally, and I'm thinking of Virginia Oaks, which is no longer there. You'd pipe it right down the middle of the fairway and it would just go dead right because it hit a mound out there.
I don't know that I've ever played a PB Dye course.
And the golf operator in me says every time one of those little pop bunkers, you're looking at a expensive maintenance expense. So,
yep, for sure.
I was looking for a photo of Pete and I at PGA Golf Club when I was down there, but I can't find it. I'll send it to you guys later. But that was, we used to have these torrential rains in Florida. The Fazio courses, we would have to spend a lot of money on fixing the bunkers and on. They were the last courses to open. Pete's drainage work was so exceptional. We opened right up. We had 14 inches of rain one year. National Guard's at the front of Perfect Drive. Couldn't get staff in. 2 days later, we're playing on the dye. It's incredible. He used to call me and go, "Hey, Bobby, I'm out on the 14th hole. Get out here." And I'd run out, and he'd have his dog 60 because he paid 60 bucks for the dog, so he could name it 60.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and he'd go, "Hey, we got to cut this and cut that." And I go, "Well, Pete, it's environmentally sensitive." And he'd go, "F that. Cut it." He was a character.
That's funny.
All right, so Seth, we just got to pick a date. We're heading to Indiana. Hoosier territory. All right, Andy, what else we didn't talk about? I think we should probably jump on the bandwagon of protests at golf tournaments.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty pathetic.
Dude, it's a joke.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say other than it's disappointing, it's annoying, it's, but I guess that's what their job is to do that, right?
Be a disruptor.
Yep.
It's funny. I think I stay in touch with things. I didn't even see the episode on TV. Didn't see the issue. Didn't hear about it until you guys were bringing it up right before we hit tape. So maybe they're. What they wanted to do. I mean, I'm in the golf industry, but I didn't even know about that thing.
Andy, you want to set the stage for any other people out there that are not aware?
Yeah, so the final group hits their approach shots into the last green. It was Akshay, it was Scotty, and it was Tom Kim. And they get up to the green and, you know, the protesters come on. There was like three or four of them. And they go on the green with spray paint and they start spray painting, you know, around the hole, and, you know, like a million, cops from East Hartford came out and, basically tackled them and got them off the green. And Tom Kim, you know, waits for all the dust to clear and rolls in a 15 footer to get into a playoff. Which is pretty amazing after all that for him to still get up there and make that putt.
Yeah, East Hartford PD rectified and eliminated the threat.
Yeah, quickly.
Bobby, is this, I already know the answer, but I'm going to ask the question. Is this a growing threat to the golf, to the tour? It seems to be in other major sporting venues. Everybody's trying to use that venue to, or that event to showcase their issue, their complaint against the world. But golf's been pretty immune to it relatively, other than the occasional streaker and Peter Jacobson tackling them.
Or the Martha Burke with, I guess, the National. And
I stand corrected.
Shoal Creek with the PGA Championship some years ago in 1980s.
Why don't I just shut up then? I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's why you have me here. No, no. Hubert Green, death threat, the PGA Championship years ago. Well,
Southern Hills, 1977. Know.
Yeah. Yeah, I played that whole round like that. I don't know. It's a great point. It's maybe the sport, the culture leads itself to more genteel or gentlemanly or ladies conduct. But my first thought when you guys were talking about it was like, how did they get the spray paint in? Where's the security like cutting that off? Or maybe they went to the rules. We'll have to talk to Gary Young and go, did they grab some of the hazard mark? Oh, I'm sorry, not hazard. Penalty area marking.
Penalty area paint.
Yeah. I don't know. Gonna love the freedom of speech type of thing. And I didn't see that. I feel bad I didn't see it. Like, I'm not sure why I missed that. But as far as the sport, I don't know. It's just going to be out there now. Usually, I think more people have taken that social media in some regards like that. But once, I don't know, things come in threes, so we're going to see a couple more of these.
Well, I think it has, Andy, we've touched on it before. It's the clickbait generation, right?
Yeah.
So I do think we'll probably see some more of these. There's going to be more clickbait, more opportunity, and it is an opportunity to showcase. I mean, there's a reason why. There's a reason if you even go back, turn the clock back to, massacres at Munich, 1972. The eyes of the world are on that event. So, but within the confines of the event, I haven't, Bobby's going to correct me, but can't recall that occurring. Protesting, I stand corrected, our resident historian.
Now, look, it's part of what the world is today, right? I mean, everybody's, like you said, it's clickbait, kind of society, and everybody's looking to make their mark and looking to get noticed and looking to make a statement. And I don't know. I think you deal with it, you move on. I was listening coming back from Horseshoe Bay on Sirius Radio.
Did you win that?
No, sir.
Oh.
In a second, though.
Okay.
But
if our top 100 instructor had been here tonight, he probably would have given you swing tips to push you across the finish line.
He might have put me over the top.
Yep.
But on Sirius Radio, they didn't even talk about what was going on. They just referred to it as a disturbance. So they didn't say people were out on the green. They didn't say any of that. They just kind of referred to it as a disturbance and then kept talking through, the time it took to get everybody kind of cleared up and out of the way and let them keep playing.
Well, I think that's a testament to, as you touched on, I mean, those cops were on those guys fast.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the first one that went out on the green, I think Mr. White spray paint. There's what I said, I saw red, white, and blue. Maybe they were trying to be patriotic. I don't know. But the first one got gang tackled by like five cops. If it put the tackle up at the Canadian Open on Hadwin last year to shame.
Oh, to shame. It was gang tackling.
Tell you what, I take a little spray paint versus some of the stuff I had to deal with being at a club as an operator with kids going out at night and doing wheelies around the greens. And know that's happened to you, Alan. Some of these, that's not really a protest. It's just being an idiot. But now you got course damage, roundup. I mean, there's been stuff in my clubs over the years, just ridiculous.
Right. I think we've touched on before. We had an idiot here in New Jersey that recorded themselves. So I hope they're being turned into the cops, but who knows? They'll probably get off with a slap of the wrist. But Andy, golf did take place in Hartford. Good golf took place in Hartford. He was stoppable in Pinehurst, but Scotty's back to his ways.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say this, but it's getting kind of boring. And that's the way it was when Tiger was in his stretch, right? It gets kind of boring knowing that, you know, absent of something, you know, happening that's out of the ordinary, he's going to win.
Tackled by a police officer or, you know.
But can I just say again, and I'm beating this drum, I hate these elevated events. I hate them. Their fields are too small. Like, it's part and parcel to, you know, that same group always being in the hunt. I don't like it at all.
Bobby, point, counterpoint, what do you like about the elevated events?
Not a big fan of those.
Blew my idea there.
I know. Well, you know, it just, I think they used to be elevated in and of themselves, the way they had the history with them, with Pebble was Pebble and the Cross, or,
But those events were elevated already. The good players wanted to play, because a good friend of mine, Andy Heidorn, once said, it's all about the venue. They wanted to go to the venue.
Yep.
I mean, somebody, you know, Jack's was Jack Place, and it's the tour trying to manufacture history, which they like to try to manufacture history, and it's, you just can't do that. It just drives me nuts.
It's the tour trying to put the dollars into the pockets of the top players, yes, so they don't depart to a certain other location.
Yeah. It's like fake news or fake whatever, but it's just, there's a fakeness to it that's just manufactured. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So, I mean, you see Scotty win, and remarkable talent, but I did read something. He's like the most boring, great player ever. I mean, just doesn't have that pizzazz, doesn't have that. Andy mentioned about Tiger winning, but there was that pizzazz with Tiger. Amazing shots. Scotty just, like, he just keeps winning. It's inspiring. It's amazing.
I think that is to Andy's point, I think that is the Tiger, you know, when sea turtle low, a lot of times, you know, the US Open, he'd hit this insane sweeping 240 yard two iron, or he'd do something remarkable, and everybody was on the edge of their seat, like, oh my God, did you see that? Scotty's boring. He is boring. Because he hits it so damn well.
Yep.
And again, if we had our guest here in that fourth chair tonight, he could probably break down that swing. But that person ghosted us. So,
hey, we still have a half an hour. He might get back to me.
This is true.
Well, I want to make a comment in that the playoff, the final playoff hole when Tom Kim came up short, missed clubbing. The biggest thing I was surprised with was he had a fried egg lie in the bunker, because those bunkers are so manicured these days. It's rare I see I literally see a fried egg. I really am. I mean, I don't watch every day, all day, but that was my first reaction was, oh my God, wait a minute. That's an unusual lie in a bunker at a tour event, the way they want them to be manufactured, manicured, firmness. Like, these tour players don't even want a fried lie. Right.
I'm going to say something preposterous here, but I'm amazed at when somebody does get a fried egg lie, there are a lot of different ways to play it, based on, you know, what you have for green to work with. But, you know, it amazes me that a tour player doesn't have the shot that kind of digs underneath the ball, gets it up in the air and out, and it's still not going to have, you know, a lot of backward spin, but it doesn't have a ton of overspin either. And there's a way to play that shot. Seve had this great shot where he would get his hands lower than his knees. He would squat down and he would just drop the hosel of the club right behind the ball. And it dug so low and the ball popped up soft, right? Tom Kim just got in there and blasted the thing out like everyone else does and lets it, you know, overspin, roll across the green, and has 30 feet. You know, I'm amazed that you know, come on. There's a way to play that shot other than the way he did it.
And here we go. I was waiting for that moment, Andy. Now we have something we can latch on to without our instructor here. I'm going to tell you a story. 10th hole, Evergreen Country Club. Haymarket, Virginia. Bobby knows it well. Okay. I am playing with then the guy who I consider the best player I've ever been around, God rest his soul, Mike Wynn, played the tour for a while. And Bill Wallace, longtime resident golf pro throughout the Mid-Atlantic, and hit it in the right bunker, right greenside bunker, and it buried slightly. And I hit my shot, and they used to call him the Wiener King, and he's just shaking his head. And Bill goes, watch this. Throws the ball down, buries it. Bill looks at me, he goes, and Mike's explaining how he hits this shot. And he's like, Bill's like, no, everybody does it wrong. Watch this. And the logic behind it, or what he did, was instead of closing the face, he opened the face even further, kept his weight on his back foot the entire time through the swing, and exactly like you're talking about, dropping it down on it. And the ball would actually come out from shitty lies, but it would come out softer.
Yeah. 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 The whole thing with a bunker shot, people don't get this, right?
Did you notice that I just actually included something relevant regarding swings in the golf game?
You did. Very impressive.
Thank you. Thank you so much. 69-degree shoulder turn. Go ahead.
But the thing that people don't get about bunker shots is – you have to, the objective to hit a good bunker shot is the club has to get underneath the ball, right?
That's correct.
Everybody knows in a standard bunker shot, the club goes underneath, the sand blasts it out. But when the ball's buried, you got to get deeper. And the only way to do it, like sometimes if people have a lot of green to work with, people close the face, right? I've seen this happen, close it like a ton. Right. And that digs. And the ball comes out, but it ends up running quite a bit.
Right.
But just the objective of getting underneath the golf ball in those lies where the ball is sitting below the surface of the sand, that's the objective. And there are different ways to swing the club to go deeper, deeper, deeper into the sand. And if you get deeper and get under, even a buried lie, it's going to come out this way, meaning up and not out.
The other advice I give to a lot of students of mine is line up correctly and use enough club. Get it? That's a little bit of instruction joke right there. That'll help your bunker game. The other one is a lot of people come in the golf shop. How do I putt better? Hit closer. Get it?
But to your,
I'll be here all week.
To your point, though, Bob, like he made a bad mistake with his club choice. He underclubbed, and they knew it. They were talking about it on the radio. He underclubbed, and you know,
like that shot there, I cannot help but there's many, many times I sit and go, that exact same scenario. Would you see Nicholas do that? No. Nope. Would you see Tiger do it? No. Nope. Well, you just can't miss it front.
That's the thing with this generation of tour players. So it's rare when you have to manipulate a yardage, it's rare that they go to the longer club. They always go to the shorter one and try to get more out of it.
Yep.
Maybe you should prescribe to decade golf.
Kids today.
Exactly. These damn kids.
Kids today. When we were young, we had to learn. We only had a 56 degree.
My golf course was 7,000 yards front nine.
I only had even number clubs in my bag.
That's, I actually did it one time.
And a 2-wood, a 4-wood, and then 2-iron, 4-iron, 6-iron, 8-iron pitching wedge.
If there's someone under the age of 35 listening to the show right now, they have no concept where you're talking about a 2-wood.
They do not.
Not a chance. If you said 2-wood to our little prettiest podcaster right now, you go, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, they're called mini drivers now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Got it. Got it.
And not the actress, by the way.
Boom, boom.
Goodwill Hunting.
Yeah. How do you like them apples?
Yep.
Hey, so Bobby, KPMG, Northwest, good action up there.
I would say pretty solid action. Not a lot of people probably saw it. Just it is what it is with the, you know, the Women's PGA Championship, KPMG. But congrats to Amy Yang. Played well. Definitely want to do a shout-out to Stephanie Conley, PGA member, led the PGA of America's women's contingent. And I first met Stephanie when her parents, Mike and Alicia, came in my golf shop at River Run. She was 6 years old, and I was the only golf course down there that would let them take her on the golf course with her little 7-iron, and she would hit it around the course. And that's all I did was encourage her to play. But she made the junior PGA Junior Ryder Cup, played professionally. So I was rooting for Stephanie. But, it's tough to play in those majors. I've never been to the club, but, I mean, looking on TV, the optics, I mean, it's just tree-lined. I think what's the nickname? Sahali, but they call it Trolley or something, or the trees or something. It's really tough. I don't know how they grow grass there. They get so many trees with the
Seriously,
it's claustrophobia.
Yeah. Was it VJ that won there?
Yeah,
that's what I thought. Yep. Yeah, that thing is just tight. That would be the classic Sam Snead line where dogs walk in single file so they can wag their tails.
Yeah. That's one of those places too that, like, you know, you get people who curve the ball a lot. That is not a good spot for them.
I was impressed with Lexi Thompson starting out pretty well. I thought, oh, okay. You know, after we had talked about what she was going through and looking to step back, and now she's out there. You know, she had a first couple of good rounds.
Yep.
Nelly Korda?
Yeah. I was just having this discussion with my wife tonight about, she went out to play 9 holes last night, didn't do so well, played one of her best rounds literally ever today. She's like, it doesn't make any sense. I said, it's golf, like when tour players,
golf is hard.
Yeah, tour players shoot 59, whatever, like backing up a really good score with another one, it's all relative as far as like the playing ability. But even if your tour player shoots 67 and comes back the next day and shoots 72, they're like, oh, I played awful. Five shots different. The amateur golfer might go 92, 100 and something. But it's, I mean, it's just the epitome of golf. It's crazy.
It is crazy. You know what was crazy? Crazy how Bryson is celebrating like a madman. Yeah. He is taking the trophy. He is walking up and down Broad Street in Nashville. He is having a blast with that thing. I'll give him credit. Didn't get a chance to do it when he won in 2020, because, you know, they give him a very limited golf clap at Wingfoot. But I posed a question, and now that we're on air and we're recording, I posed a question in our little text chat that we banter back and forth about throughout the week. Andy Heidorn, is he the modern Arnold Palmer?
Maybe. I think he has a lot of the same, you know, kind of characteristics, and he's a people's guy. You know, the fans love him. And I've said this, Christian said it, he's grown on us, right? And I actually really enjoy watching him play. I enjoy his personality off the golf course now. Like, I could see the Arnold Palmer.
Is he more popular than Scotty right now?
I mean, I think it's a shame that you would have to have that dynamic, because people are going to take.
Andy, we live in a, it's a us or them, we two party system only. We have to choose which way we go.
More so now, though. More so now. So, I'm not answering that question, because I think there's a 50.5 to 49.5 split on that one.
On any given day. We need Shell's Wonderful World of Golf back, Bobby. I'll throw the same question to you, because I think it's on any given Sunday, he maybe is. But Scotty's loved. Are they loved for different reasons?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a tricky one. Scotty is respected. He's got all the qualities you want in that tour player that comes out of the, you know, central casting. Bryson's got he's got a little bit of Arnie in him. He's got a little bit of Walter Hagen in him. He's got a little bit of Tommy Bolt in him, probably some years ago. A little bit of compilation of guys. You know, he really has turned it around. I mean, it was pretty neat to see what he did there in Nashville. This is when you're thinking, geez, I wish I could see him play a little more often. Yeah, it'd be pretty interesting if he went head-to-head with Scotty more often. I think it's – Bryson's always on the – it's like he's like a little bit of NASCAR too. Like, you think there's going to be a crash around the corner. And Scotty's more like just – man, it's just so – he's just so good. It's just amazing. But I think the threat of the crash is when, kind of exciting with Bryson with people.
Yeah, and I will add, I totally agree with that. I just think it's a shame. Like, Liv is so uninteresting. Like, I mean, Dustin Johnson finished last this week, you know? Like, it's just uninteresting. I get it. There's people that want to love it so bad, and they want to hate the PGA Tour. They want to hate Jay Monahan. They want to hate Scottie Scheffler. I get it. To your point, Alan, all the division, right? But at the end of the day, I really find it hard to find anything compelling about the competition of Liv. And when Bryson comes and plays in a major, and Tyrrell Hatton does, and, you know, some of these other guys come and play, it's nice to see him back. They should be there. But going and doing your Liv thing is just uninteresting.
Agreed.
I still think it would be the only way that I get excited would see like a skins game with PGA members or these tour players put up their own money. Because in our own way, we're always, you know, you play skins, you play this, that at your club, you put in your, I don't know, 5-10, whatever it is. Like, that would, nobody's ever done that. I don't know if they've, you know, had the guts to do it or whatever you want to call it, whatever phrase, but I know, Liv, you get all this money, but if they were ever going to bring one of those silly season events back with golf, and the only way I'd watch would be you put up your own money and let's see what you do. That would get my interest.
That would be compelling.
Yeah, like serious money.
Yep.
So Bryson down in there in Nashville, U.S. Open trophy sitting on the range as he warms up. He was held off the U.S. Olympic team.
I missed who made the team. Do you have that? Or
Xander, Cantlay, Scheffler, and who's the fourth one?
Was it a Morikawa?
Yes.
So, right decision, wrong decision. They have qualification standards. I mean, I'm scrolling through here. Netherlands won't be sending, you know, two players because they're just outside the top 100. I don't have their names right here in front of me. But again, is this one of those situations where he knew what he could potentially be losing by making his decision to go to Liv? Or is this, hey, he's one of the hottest players on the planet right now. I don't care what you're playing in. he should be on the team representing the good old US of A. Robert, to you first.
Yeah, my initial reaction was, is he an American citizen? And should he just, one of the best golfers, end of story? Like, did it have to be part of the PGA Tour? What if there was some golfer out there that was just playing so well, so crazy good? Like, I don't know. You watch swimming, tennis. Well,
you could say that about a bear for the Ryder Cup last year. I mean, here's a guy who won a tournament and never played in a major, and they stuck him on the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, you know, I don't know all the small details, devil in the details, all that stuff, but I just thought the guy was right up there with the Masters, right on the doorstep, could have almost, should have won the PGA potentially, wins the U.S. Open. Like, wow, how do you leave someone like that off the team on the surface anyways? And then you get into sort of the golf politics, the tours, this, that, the other, and again, the devil in the details, but should have been a viable pick anyways.
Yeah, I mean, they do it by world ranking, right? And we all know the strife with LIV in world ranking points, so that's not really equitable. I wonder, you know, you mentioned swimming and track and field and all those. How do they pick those teams? Like, is it subjective? Is it objective? How is it?
You know, well, I'm sure I don't know the details. I do know that they have the swimming nationals or swimming trial.
Yeah, where they have Olympic trials.
Mm-hmm. So, but who even gets invited to the trials? How do you get invited to the trial? I don't have the answer to that.
Instead of doing the, you know, world ranking, why wouldn't they just call the U.S. Open like Olympic trials?
Yeah, there you go.
Because then maybe you get like some random guy who, you know, outlier that ends up qualifying for the Olympics. But that's how the Olympic qualifying works anyway.
Yeah, you run the fastest, swim the fastest, throw it the furthest, whatever.
Are you suggesting that they have like one tournament for the Olympics?
Yeah, it would have to be a major. It would have to be something that,
you know. Well, the U.S. Open would be the natural one to pick, right?
Yeah.
But they could do. Remember, years ago, the PGA had that Grand Slam of golf, and they took the winners of each major, put them together, lost a lot of money for the PGA. They couldn't wait to get rid of that. as an aside, as I share. But that would be interesting if you could have set the stage for X amount of majors and whoever plays the best in those. And, you know, that seems like it's pretty good qualifying.
So this would be the Olympic team, okay? It would be Bryson, the U.S. Olympic team, would be Bryson, Patrick Cantlay, Tony Finau, and Russell Henley. If they use the U.S. Open, that's what it would be.
And if you use an aggregate of the Open plus the PGA, you obviously, I'm not going to ask you to come up with that right off, but
yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
He's good. He can do that.
Yeah. Rain Man. Judge Walker. 4 p.m.
But if you think about it, like all this golf playoffs and all the other stuff that is accumulating points, why not have a trial like that? And whatever happens, happens.
I mean, back in the day, we had our PGA to qualify for to be a PGA golf professional, you have to pass the PGA playing ability test. They would be running that test concurrent with some of our section championships or in chapter championships at least.
Yeah. Yep.
Missed by a shot. Damn it.
Okay, so if it were last year, the U.S. Olympic team would have been Wyndham Clark, Scottie Scheffler, Ricky Fowler, and Harris English. So the randomness would be kind of cool for once in a blue moon, you know?
Yeah. That'd be interesting. Not that there's not enough, like, prestige and a little bit of pressure, but that would really ramp up the U.S. Open.
Yeah, and again, there's so many other things in golf that are tied to world rankings and playoff points, FedEx Cup points.
Yeah, this is just putting the peg in the ground. I like it.
Yeah.
Let's advocate. Hashtag.
Let's do it.
Olympic trials. Olympic golf trials.
Yep. Just like every other sport, except basketball, where they have somebody pick.
Randomness. Yeah. Just random.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Bobby, what else we got as the cart wheels towards the 18th green? Beer carts Campus. In the beer cart or the club, the pub is in the very near distance for me.
Panthers won the Stanley Cup, but wow, the Bruins are making
for
some
the
good
love
trades.
Of God.
We'll get the
that
Bruins
the worst,
back. In
that was the worst.
Why?
There were a lot of hockey people thought that was one of the better, if not the best, modern day Stanley Cup finals.
I think it was. I would 110% agree with that. I think that there was more people anticipating. If you were a fan of hockey, there was more people wanting to watch that playoff and that Game 7 in particular than it was a highly anticipated game.
Yeah,
I'm unhappy personally for the outcome. I respect the Panthers. They're a great team. I'd love to have any one of the players that happen to be golfers also on the show. I was rooting for Edmonton. That's the old school side of me. They grew up watching the great Oilers teams of yesteryear.
How about that sequence with like 4 minutes to go where McDavid kind of gets the puck in front of the net and then, you know, his stick gets checked and then
Hyman's
stick get, I mean, what a, and yep. Bobrovsky is like scrambling around like a squid.
I mean, that he both of those players had him pretty much dead to rights, and I cannot remember who the Florida's defenseman was. I mean, but he should have got a stick tap on the
one on Hyman, especially because he came from behind and just stick checked him, and it was like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They, I mean, again, Florida did a great job. And if you've been following social media, they are enjoying their time so far with the cup. It's taken a dip in the Atlantic Ocean. It's they're pouring beer off the elbow room on South Beach. They're enjoying their time with the cup.
Nothing like NHL playoffs. I think of all the playoffs, it's the most exciting.
Couldn't agree more.
I can tell you here. Neither of you guys know this little known factoid. So when I moved to, it would be the Cavalier Cup. But when I moved to Hershey at one time, I bought the house of Bob Hartley, who went on to coach the Colorado Avalanche. Oh, yeah. And when they won with the Cavalier Cup in Hershey, he had it sitting at the bottom of his pool, which eventually became my pool because I bought the house.
That's awesome.
I guess they had an epic party.
Did you buy the Calder Cup with the house?
I did not. But the upstairs bedroom was painted in Colorado Avalanche colors.
That's awesome.
All right, Bobby. Now it is the 18th green. What you got?
Well, had a fun day today. A little surreal. Some years ago at PGA headquarters, I get a phone call from a gentleman in California. He had been doing the Nike golf camps, and he goes, I want to see if we can't get the PGA to get behind PGA junior camps. So fast forward, just had a lot of really great work with Mark Haddad, who lives in Sacramento, and helped Mark get the PGA junior camps going. Had a lot of pushback from people that thought, well, that's stupid. Why do we need a systematic program to help PGA pros with junior camps? But the way Mark does the PGA junior camps with the marketing, the advertising, finding kids and families that really want to get into the game. We put together curriculum. The kids get, there's just so much more robust behind it than just sort of what was happening at some of the clubs out there in America. So, I started my PGA Junior camps this week, and it was a little bit surreal going from knowing in the beginning how we started, and it was very humble beginnings, to now teaching it at the green grass. So that was pretty cool today.
Sweet. Kudos. I'm sure junior golfers everywhere, thank you.
We had a good time.
Mr. Hydorn?
Yeah, so I just came back from the Horseshoe Bay four ball this weekend, which is a tournament they run every year out, you know, kind of north of Austin. And it is just the most amazing event that these people run. And it's a big resort. They have a great hotel and three golf courses. We play one round on each course. And it costs to enter the tournament. It costs $325 a person. You get four rounds of golf. You get two lunches. You get, you know, a really nice tea gift, a leather scorecard holder and a towel. I mean, like, really nice, right? And then you get into the cash game for $100 a man. So you're into this thing for 4.25. And my partner and I didn't win. We finished second. We walked away with, now this is each, $650 in credit. Ooh. And $550 in cash. Okay? Wow. I mean, these people take nothing from this tournament. They give it all back to the players, and they look at it as a way to market their resort. And it's just such an awesome weekend with great friends. Competition was great. Amateur golf can be so great.
Agreed. A little disappointing you didn't invite me.
There is a shoulder turn limit.
You see somebody a designated putter. Mine, as reported by Monday Q on X, mine is about Nick Bienz. I hope I pronounced that right. Never played, works at Golf Galaxy, never played in a PGA Tour sanctioned event, never played an event bigger than his own state open, makes it through the preliminary qualifier, makes it to the qualifier where he finds himself in a playoff waiting on five groups to finish. Does Nick head out to the range? Oh, no, no. Nick sits there and pounds three beers before the playoff because he's so damn nervous and qualifies this week for the Rocket Mortgage, winning in the playoff.
That's awesome.
He has been contacted by multiple distilleries at this point, as is reported. So, Nick, I'm rooting for you, dude.
Swing juice is not a, it's not a,
there's nothing wrong with swing juice. No. I think I'm gonna go have some.
It's not, that works. It's like,
all right, boys. I'm sorry. Did our esteemed guest have anything to say? No, nothing, nothing at all.
No, he's out. But let's talk about our next week's guest, which is going to be awesome. We have a special, I'm not going to say any more than that, but we have a special fun guest coming on next week.
Until then, we wait.
You only have one opportunity to sell your golf property. Shouldn't you partner with an expert that offers you 30 plus years of golf industry experience combined with the reach of a global leader in real estate? Colliers International Golf Brokerage and Advisory Services understands your unique business needs. Whether it is brokerage, management, and consulting, be reassured that the market leader in the business of golf is providing you the real answers and practical solutions you deserve. Contact Golf Talk Live co-host and Colliers Golf Advisory Services member Alan DePew today at 717-554-8519. That's 717-554-8519.